be driven towards margin. I think sometimes we see
Ooh, okay.
a lot of
Interesting.
podcasts and many people focus on revenue. I think for us, it's
We had this
about,
discussion about profitability.
for us, it's really around, yes, we look ideally 150% ROAS after 120 days.
Nice.
This is what we feel that it's a healthy business.
This is no bullshit gaming podcast, 2.5 gamers. Sharing actionable insights, dropping knowledge from our day-to-day user acquisition, game design, and ad monetization jobs. We are definitely not discussing the latest industry news, but having so much fun. Let's not forget this is a 4 a.m. conference discussion vibe, so let's not take it too seriously.
Of course. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode. My name is Matija Lančarić.
I'm Felix Broberg.
And I'm Jakub Remjar.
And we are your hosts. And we have Alvar over here, which is our special guest from Voodoo. We'll give you a time for your introduction because you're very special guests. And I mean, we know each other. We had a call after our latest episode about Voodoo. So, you know, we thought we should bring you on. Before
we
start...
The same. We
sound
the same.
Very good. That's very good. Perfect. So we're going to discuss the Voodoo gaming portfolio and like how you kind of approach the hybrid kind of monetization, what you are doing on that side. Before we go there, so we are, you know, we want to invite all of you to Istanbul because there is also Google event happening on 7th of March, and there is a super secret 2.5 gamers event happening on 6th of March. So apparently, like, everybody's traveling already on like 1 or 2 days before. So we thought we're gonna have a small 200 people knowledge sharing session. So we have a few talks lined up, and then there's gonna be after party. I'm gonna share the landing page as soon as it's ready, so you can start registering. Is that good enough for intro?
Alvaro is should... intro himself as well.
Yeah,
Alvaro. Good intros. Yeah.
Who
are
you,
Alvaro?
Yeah, please. Yeah, please let us know. Yeah. Tell us.
So it's a pleasure to meet.
What's the star sign?
It's a my star sign. Aries. Does it mean anything? No. So yeah, working at Voodoo. I joined Voodoo 3 years ago. I am helping Voodoo actually to move from hyper casual to what we call hybrid casual slash casual. Before that, I worked at King for almost 7 years, managing some of the key franchises and innovation for the company. And before that, was managing studios in Asia for Gameloft, so like 17 years in mobile gaming.
Ooh.
And at the moment, I'm focusing on leading what we call live games. At Voodoo, so basically the games that are available to be played.
Nice.
Sounds
okay.
Pretty solid.
That's a sexy job.
Thank you.
Right now, right? It's so right in time, right? Perfect. Yeah.
You said so. You are in Voodoo 3 years, so it took a while until you got here, right? Like in terms of the turning hyper casual to hybrid casual kind of stuff.
That's right.
It's not easy.
It wasn't.
Yeah, but yeah, apparently you are doing something very right from the numbers we see. I mean, external tools, obviously. So, I would assume like this is even better than what we see in the external tools.
Maybe I can start off by just asking Alvaro, like, is hyper casual dead, or is it alive and kicking?
I get this question a lot. I really believe that as a business model, it is dead. I think they would still enjoy fresh core gameplays that can be played for a couple of days. But due to the rise of CPIs, it's just not profitable enough to see growth. Does it mean dead like today? Well, I think that there are still marginal revenues that could be done. But investing for that on the future, I personally don't believe so. And Voodoo, we completely stopped and we moved completely to hybrid casual and casual. I think, and we are not the only ones observing that. I think some studios are clinging to hyper casual. I think it will be complicated.
Yeah, you know, because big companies are moving away from hyper casual. So does that mean like there is maybe an opportunity for small gaming companies to just start, or is it like super late already? I mean,
I think it's late.
Yeah,
I think it's late.
So it's already late.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's late. I think the changes on IDFA, like CPIs, are not going to decrease anytime soon. Like the big companies are
anytime soon, meaning never.
That's right. And you can see also like the big actors are like spending considerably, right? It just doesn't fit to be profitable, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, let's okay. So, which game are gonna we talk about? And by the way, I'm very disappointed, Felix and Jakub, because you didn't mention my flamboyant flamingo over
you're
there.
You're flamboyant enough that I don't need to mention a flamingo behind you.
Because I brought another guest in this.
So a little bit of overview, I would say, would be warranted here. So we, for those who don't know, we covered blockchain 3D and mob control in a separate episode independently before.
And collect them all as well. So it was one.
And thank you for doing that. Yeah,
something like that. So we're just going to, like, I just want to kind of briefly frame it as I usually do there. So looking at kind of a Voodoo evolution as like a whole, that what we see here in the Sensor Tower, we can clearly see the trend that like downloads are kind of stabilizing or even declining, and IAP, and I stress that IAP revenue is skyrocketing.
Yeah, so down that graph.
So it's literally screaming to me like the people that's happening there. That's definitely there. The games that I mentioned before, Mob Control here, when we clearly see the trend there, like the game was launched as hyper casual success, and then later on, after I think like this is what, like nearly 2 years, it got morphed into a hybrid, and same, I guess a little bit different stories with blockchain 3D.
This is absolutely killing it. I mean, I'm really like, kudos, like hats off. This is just amazing.
The teams are doing an amazing job.
The fresh estimates that we see here is Mob Control is doing something like, let's say 60K IP a day, and blockchain 3D is doing something like 75, 80.
You kind of need to calculate the sadness multiplier, which can be developed.
Higher.
And since Alvaro is smiling, this is definitely underestimated.
Yeah. And I estimated about, on Mob Control, I estimated about 50% ad revenue on top of that. So, yeah.
So,
it's a good, good estimation.
Nice.
Maybe my first question here is that, because it will lead probably to more questions here, is, how do you see the evolution that Mob Control underwent, or like if you can talk a little bit about the background changes? Because I talk in like numerous talks about this, how the game shifted from this kind of very, very simple, just three upgrade buttons at the bottom game, where later down the line, the visual progression was added, the, let's say, streamlined version of like stuff that, let's say, social casinos use, like Coin Master, all these, where they just like literally like just index points that reveal or furnish some kind of a visual picture, then moves to next one. And then the biggest upgrade that really kicked in the revenue was the addition of gacha and turning those three upgrade buttons into like separate like token economy on shard gacha based basis. But by the way, I searched the player forums, tried to calculate the spend of the Mob Control, and just the gold that I found there, like some calculations of guys that were just like, how much currency, soft currency, to upgrade these cars, not counting into cars, like, if I anchor it correctly, it was something just $30,000 just for the gold, all of them.
This is Jakub saying he's very excited to have you on the podcast. And
to
talk about this.
It's pretty deep. So
research. That's good.
Yeah, if you can talk a little bit about the background or how Mob Control went like into the stage that it's today.
Yeah, it would be difficult to summarize the whole work from the team, right? And well, I would try to give a bit of justice. I think what's really amazing with the team behind Mob Control is that they really had from the beginning a long-term vision, right? And I think it sounds cliche to say that, but I think that's really what makes this game stand apart, is that every feature that is being built, sprint after sprint, goes towards a common point. And yes, you are mentioning topics around the armory, around improving your weapons and with gacha mechanics. But you will see that actually the more you play, and this is, I think, true for all the other hybrid casual games at Voodoo, the more you play, the more you will see sophisticated gameplay. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one thing that probably you are not seeing so much now is how actually map control gets into real-time competition, like real PvP. Many players think in the beginning that is actually faked, but all the PvPs are true. And leaderboards and competition actually drive a lot of retention here. And it's a game that just keeps on getting more and more fun to be played. The thing is that we really time very well when some features appear.
I think the unfolding,
we are very progressive. So that's one thing as well. And obviously, live ops, I think all the companies are doing the same, but good live ops and a good calendar of live ops helped the growth, obviously, with unique items that you can unlock through also season passes. I think each season pass has your set of missions, but also your special reward. So, yeah, and the game is getting more and more sophisticated, I was mentioning. And you will see, I think you will see a big, big change as well in the coming weeks as well. That we are very, very excited about. To be honest, I think...
Any teasers that you can share?
It will make even better the sense of progression.
Nice.
Way more visual and way more meaningful. Okay. So that's for the teaser. And to be frank, I think give it a couple of years, I think this game will be a full-fledged mid-core game.
I think
it will be difficult to still refer it as an hybrid casual because of the sophistication of the features.
Yeah, it's definitely going there. Like, my one gripe with the gacha would be that it's a kind of linear progression without the incentives in the core gameplay, because usually how gachas work, that there's some kind of a requirements within gameplay where I, let's say, would need to build a second team or some kind of, let's say, you know, let's say yellow guy cannot be used in this level. I need to use whatever, another guy, which I think is kind of missing currently. But I guess that is like just the evolution is part of it. And
it's
later
there.
Down the line.
It's there down the line. For example, we have something called the loadout challenges that really it's opt-in challenges that but you need to use different set of equipment. You have different missions and also... When you go into like the upper leagues of mob control, like it really gets highly, highly competitive, and you really, really need to level up your units. And so it just takes some time to unfold.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Jakub. I know. I remember when we had the call after our episode. You also said that the calling them all kind of like changes dramatically after let's say level 100 or something. And it's
absolutely.
And I saw this week or last week an article about this from one of your colleagues that's saying, oh my god, this is actually not hyper casual, but it's turning into casual game down the line.
And I think it's the onboarding is really an onboarding that takes a bit of time. It's also due to also how we acquire users as well. And we are constantly testing when some live ops actually or some features are the good place to be introduced, and we try, okay, let's introduce that sooner. And sometimes the players don't react very well. But it's something that we are constantly tweaking. And yes, collect them all a level 100, very different from the level 1, for example, experience. Yeah. It's a very different game.
Yeah, I think like this is really the key part here, like the heap of knowledge behind all of those A-B tests, when to unfold which feature, because we're not really talking about our usual, like, let's just slap a casual game tutorial on it with like 30 minutes and then unfold the whole feature set because it won't work here. And this is exactly the point where I guess like that steady pace of let's test this feature, like, I don't know, day 7, day 8, maybe it's too soon, maybe move it to day 14, something, which kind of gives you the edge then that, okay. And that brings me to my other question. When you were pretty much scaling up Blockjam 3D, we can see that the progressions are pretty much the same, except the PvP element. That's like the big change, of course, because in mob control, other people can destroy your, you know, visual points here, and you can receive attacks, revenge attacks, stuff like that. Of course, this is not applied to Blockjam 3D, but the progression style is kind of the same.
Correct.
So, So the question would be here, like, if you saw the positive impact of the numbers on mob control, did you immediately just like told the team, like, hey guys, we know this meta feature works, yeah, should we implement it, or we immediately tested it within the build?
The good thing, I think it's part of having a culture in our company that is really extremely pragmatic, and all A/B tests results are shared across the board. And when something works, we try very, very fast. Yes. So obviously you can see the inspiration where it came from, and it worked. Will it stay like that forever? I don't know. But for this element of the progression, it was the right move to take from mob control.
And yeah, definitely.
We always share constantly, and a lot of features are cross-pollinated across all our portfolio and very, very fast. You don't need to convince the teams, like because the teams are actually very driven by the success of their games.
You see the revenue growth, and then it's like, yeah, I don't think like anyone needs to convince.
That's right.
It's like,
do I get it right for people just like maybe omitting the fact here that this is, of course, published by Voodoo, but in the end made by two different external studios that are working with Voodoo?
No, actually, now everything is eternal.
Everything is internal.
I mean, part of is already kind of like part of Voodoo.
It's part of Voodoo.
Yeah.
And the team looking after mob control is in the internal studio as well.
Okay, so there's a big shift there, if I understand here.
So it's Party Up. These guys are amazing. They came up with this and they decided to join us, yeah.
Because I think when I was like, few of my talks before, like especially last year, I was talking exactly about this topic, that hyper-casual publishers would struggle with the problem that they were used to kind of working with external studios mainly, which means the product know-how usually either left or stayed there, not internally. So I guess this is the answer to that kind of a challenge from your side, that you're internalizing teams now.
It's a part of the answer, yes. And I think the second part is we took the radical step 1 year and a half ago to actually divide the gaming teams in actually two tracks. One, we call it the core team. So it's led by Charles and Thibaut. And basically, those people are really in charge of coming up with successful prototypes and testing thousands of gameplays, right? And the other team, it's what we call live games. Those are the teams that actually take the game from 1 to 100, where the others took it from 0 to 1. It's equally as hard, but it requires a different level of expertise. So internalizing studios is part of the answer, but also we are dividing the work. And I think many companies are actually reaching the same, conclusion, because live management, it's actually very tough, right? When you are scaling a game, it's very different tracks.
This year.
yes, Supercell, and it's amazing, right? When I was at King also, we went through that division as well. Live management, when you want to keep a game relevant for the next 10 years, and if you have hundreds of people working behind successful titles, it's an expertise on its own. And sometimes you need also different type of mindsets and different type of experience, I would say.
And would you say then that you also have like a dedicated live ops team, as you mentioned, the core team?
Live ops team is within the live studios, yes. And definitely it's something that we are putting more and more, focus on, because live ops can mean many things, right? You're talking about calendar, and you are talking about content, but you also are talking at some point about economy, about segmentation, about customer relationship. So when you go in the rabbit hole of live ops, it can take you very, very far. Yes.
Could I just butt in here and ask a question? Because ad monetization, you know, is the most important thing. So.
Oh,
basically, monetization is cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so basically I wanted to ask a question around Skipits, right? So Remo, if you can go into mob control and just open up the store and show off the Skipits. So it's quite clear that now in the hybrid casual push, it's kind of split off into two main schools of thought. It's kind of one led by you guys and one by Say Games. So Voodoo, you guys pretty much started with the Skipits, basically tickets that you can utilize to skip one rewarded ad, basically per unit cost for tickets. And then you have the Say Games method, which is kind of now splintering off and kind of allowing users to use premium currency to skip the rewarded ad and just cutting out the Skipits. Can you just talk a little bit about the thinking behind that and what the cannibalization or incremental results have been for you guys from implementing Skipits?
Well, I think maybe we'll be disappointed by the answer, but it's just a question of A/B testing different solutions and see what actually works best and drives more LTV. The Skipits work pretty well in mob control because also you have to couple that with the subscription packages that mob control has. For example, all the top players are subscribed to mob control.
Yeah.
And the Skipits really bring a lot of value because it allows you actually to go very, very fast. Will it work in every game? We test it. But sometimes the results also depend. So I think it's really a case by case rather than a general rule. And it all comes back also to the first thing that I was mentioning about what I think mob control is so special is because they have this really good vision that everything fits very well. And I think mob control you play, it still feel very, how can I say, day one. You can still build a lot of features, but everything is very cohesive. And the Skipits, I think, are part of that experience.
Would, I don't know if you're allowed to say, but on an LTV incremental average percentage, are we talking about single digit uplifts, double or triple digit like uplifts in terms of overall user LTV? You don't need to say specific percentage, but I'm just a bit curious.
It's a good uplift. And I would say at the moment, the revenue between ads and in-app is, as you mentioned, is like around 50-50 on mob control, but the in-apps are really growing steadily.
That was kind of my question. If you increase the IAP revenue, does it always mean like you cannibalize the ads?
And like it depends. It depends to who you show ads and in which products, right? We shouldn't never see ads as a bad thing, right? Well, ads are actually 100%. Very, very cool. Like,
Ads
are beautiful.
Yes.
I mean, if it's well implemented, it brings a lot of value. And it's a reality that some players will never pay. Not because of a lack of money, but sometimes
they are Jakub Remiar. He doesn't pay. Jakub has never made an IAP in his
entire gaming career.
I did.
Some players, they feel that actually when they pay, they are actually spoiling the fun. And other players, they think like, no, actually, I'm spending hundreds of hours and actually this is my main source of fun. And it's all logical that they invest. Ads is here also to, how can I say, be there for a different specific set of needs and players. I really believe that when it's implemented, it's actually triggers value.
Mm. I agree.
Last thing I could add here is just like it needs to be budgeted into the economy. Like the output of how much stuff ads are giving needs to be budgeted into the economy, you know, master sheet, and that's it. If you do it properly, then it's great. If you screw it up, it's, you know, your turn.
And ads, I recommend is that ads, they bring you a specific product and other products can only be driven, for example, within apps and you can define patterns. But yes, it brings a different level of complexity. Because you need to understand, will this player will become a payer, yes or no? And testing ads is, I would say, is not a one-off thing. Like you need to constantly retest when is the good introduction of ads in terms of interstitials, at what level, how many gameplay, and it depends on the cohorts. It's a discipline, but it allows the games to scale, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm assuming you must have done some tests around Skipits versus letting users use premium currency to skip rewarded ads. Like, would you ever like try the other thing and go kind of the Say Games route, or is Skipits, you think, the best solution for it?
I think I think it's, I wouldn't break something that works for mob control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more, and Say Games, I have a lot of respect for Say Games, but I think mob control has his own journey.
Yeah.
And driving, like, I think features that I think are very innovative. Obviously, there are things that are, true innovation is also comes from inspiration. But I think Mob Control is not a game that is following, I would say.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But so also I think like, here it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep in mind that like Mob Control has like kind of a different economy because if I understand correctly, there's not really a hard currency in it per se. Because even the, let's say, let's take like the other side of the river, hobby template. Usual hobby template is run on the gacha shop with hard currency. But if you go into Mob Control, I guess also the other booster packs are from direct money purchases, not for hard currency, which is a giant difference, which I think is also a big driver of conversion here. So the economy would need to work completely different if you would even want to switch the skibbits out of it.
Yeah, I think it will be the wrong priority to actually, because when you have games that are successful, you go through a lot of internal challenges, right? You need to grow the team and scale the team to follow the success. And obviously, everybody has tons of ideas. And suddenly, you have a wish list like this in the roadmap. And it's difficult sometimes to decide what to do next quarter, right? But definitely, this is not something that I think should be touched in the short term or medium term.
Yeah, that's like sounds fair on that. Okay.
Blockchain.
I know. Yeah, we can talk a little bit about blockchain, but like, don't want to talk that much, to be honest.
Suddenly, don't want to talk that much. Oh my god! Like, who are you? Like, it's the beginning. Like, what are you talking about?
I have a different game here running that I want to talk about, which I think is very interesting.
Let's go back, and I will tell you why. It's like you are level 32. I'm level 40. Fuck that.
Yeah. Okay.
that's my answer to your
thank you both for playing the game first.
Yeah, but
it's like, really hard actually.
I
love that.
To be honest, Blockjam it has this like very very nice meta game of these kind of let's say time events that are like literally my guess is they're kind of probably mostly bot run or I don't know how, but like they literally pair just a very small cohort of players in this very, very speedy schedule. Like literally within hours, you have just, you know, the time to kind of finish there. And all it's nicely done to just reinforce playing the main core loop, nothing else. Yeah, like all these
feels like everything is like it's happening, like something is happening always.
You don't really need to learn like new mechanics or whatever. It's just happening on its own. It just nicely reinforces the core gameplay. Something similar, like let's say Monopoly Go has, I think, like the similar progression there because these users probably don't want to get here into like whatever deck building, theory crafting, something. So again, we see the nice push with like simplified same visual progression, but completely different kind of a meta games.
And you don't even know like what's happening after level 100 in this game as well.
You mean like 100,000?
Yeah, the leaderboards in this game is insane. Yeah. I want to ask, is it real people in that leaderboard? Because like I go to the global one. Like, do you have that many levels?
What? No matter what, in the future, we want it to be more and more. How can I say? Real interactions. Yeah. I think, and I think this is also a game that the more you play, the more features you unfold. Yeah. Yeah. This is really, really the beginning. The game was released recently, I would say. The team is doing a very, very good job. And like, I think it will be interesting to take a picture of what the game is today and you take the same picture in 1 year. I think you will be very, very surprised. Mm. And this game too, I think it's a casual game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think like hybrid, of course, there is ads, but I think it's not enough to have ads to be called hybrid. But
when 27%, I said, I'm not sure. It might be too high.
Of ads, you're close, but in-apps are even a little bit stronger than that. And but when you see the retention, the in-apps, and the trajectory, this is a full-fledged puzzle, a casual puzzle.
Yeah, 100%. And we
believe it can go far. It's a very very fun game. And,
it's already went far. Like
it's already doing really well. It's like
we are very ambitious.
And yeah, that's what I want to say. And I feel like this is just the beginning.
Yeah. Do you think like you would like eventually end up like, you know, getting shoulder to shoulder with people like Playrix or, you know, Dream Games or like these guys here?
That's our goal in the long term. Yes. Mm. I think there is absolutely no reason why at some point we cannot position Voodoo as a top tier casual company. I mean, when you look at our capacity of marketing is world class because of, I mean, the number of installs that the marketing drive is just after Google and Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. And when you look at the sheer numbers of prototypes that are being done and the pace that we are doing, I mean, it's a different approach to casual. And I have only respect for Dream, Playrix, Peak, and King. But yeah, the idea is really that Voodoo needs to be there in the medium term. Absolutely.
Yeah, because think about this. We had Sam from Less More on the last podcast. They're a small team. Can you imagine like how many teams like these small teams are in Voodoo at this point, like making new prototypes? Court is like, oh my god! Like,
what I'm pointing at that like. It seems to me that this will be later down the line the mandatory way how to do things because of the CPI hurdles. Because it's like you can build your own whatever
second best UA manager on the
giant whatever casual game and like have progressions and whatever. But like it doesn't make sense if you cannot just, you know, breach the CPI wall there. And the only way to breach the CPI wall is to, you know, position the game at least from creative and like this kind of onboarding standpoint as a hyper casual. And we see this not only on the casual side, we see this on the core side. Like our friends from Century Games, like it's all about that exactly.
Yeah.
It's like core people are also kind of trying to use these, let's say, latest tricks here to position the completely core, not mid core, just core games to look like hyper casuals to begin with, from creatives to the whole onboarding. So
it doesn't need to be only hyper casual, but also like different types of gameplay as well.
Definitely companies need to be absolutely proficient on CPI. I think we all heard the successful stories of Dream, but it's true that for one company like Dream we don't see the thousands and thousands of companies that failed, right? So here I think each company finds their own journey, and I think we somehow managed to transform ourselves but kept pieces of the DNA that allows us to build for the future.
Yeah, you've run UA for a lot of games, and you know, like that's a very good experience and a very good base for like the upcoming years.
Yeah, it's a difficult expertise.
Now onto
moving on a little bit to Paper.io, because I know Alvaro mentioned to me before, and I just want to kind of highlight it. Not really as some kind of everybody needs to talk about it, but I think it's a great example of like what is happening, and we can talk about a little bit there if I find the right app.
Yeah, maybe one. If you click on some of those tabs, then we're going to go somewhere.
This is the one that I'm trying to get there, because if we see the launch of Paper.io 2, it was somewhere in 2018. Giant launch, literally millions of dollars a day.
Day.
I'm not kidding here, looking at the chart. And now we see that the game actually, in 2022, it actually tripled or quadrupled the amount of downloads that it's currently doing. But the interesting part is also on the revenue side, where, of course, there were some revenue because of the giant amount of downloads before, but we literally see this kind of giant U-turn valley where suddenly IAPs started scaling up.
Alchemy.
Yeah, and how this went on. And I was looking at the old builds of the game. Again, similar case as Mob Control, I would say, where you have, like, I think there wasn't even, like, main menu. It was literally, like, just,
Jacob,
like...
Jacob, can you put back the sensor tower to the background? It's it's quite nice if you have those games and then you're...
No, this one, okay.
Yes, now this, this is good.
Okay. So the thing is that the game again went like very, very heavy, like let's say metagame changes. Like as I look through the game, let me play just like one match to understand how it's going. So the game is a little bit, I would say, harder to understand because I was a little bit lost into it, but it's basically some kind of I got killed. Some kind of advanced version of Snake where you are pretty much creating your own territory by completing a line around your territory and ending there. And at any point, whoever crosses your line kills you, or if you yourself slams into your own line, you also kill yourself, which also happened to me a lot. So, and by that point on, actually, when you get the hang of it, it's pretty fun. Possibilities to kill other people, to come up with these kind of different tactics, to kind of just stay near your territory, play it safe, then like swiftly go and kill the other guy. So it gets progressively, like I would say, skill-based, you know, harder. And then the important part is that there was like a lot of, yeah, a lot of visual progression again added into the game, like we see here. So the main point of the game regarding the metagame features is that you are painting the whole world with like your color of your skin that you're currently using. And it's literally like continents that you have there. Like I'm currently in whatever, this is...
Mexico.
Yeah, US, yeah. I'm in Mexico. There's like other countries there. I think there was some kind of special...
Is it a giraffe?
Yeah, I'm using a giraffe. Aww, there was some kind of special event for Guatemala that I could like try to kind of get some kind of swiftly. It's also a little bit of idle progression because you can claim soft currency that regenerates by hours. There's actually a progression of the boosters now. So you can upgrade the boosters. And I think this is like worth mentioning. You can actually have one more life by default by spending 50k soft currency just for the first one. Why not? And then, of course, there's the skins, which come all the way from epic to specials, which I guess come through some achievements or events. And then there's the shop, which again have skip it. There we go. And then there are these events. I think I even got the special offer badge here today, but it kind of ran out. And there's a little bit of a like killing event here, where it just counts your kills and pushes you on the leaderboard again to reinforce the main core gameplay. And then occasional ad or occasional booster that's like right there in the main menu, the rewarded placement right here.
So just for a second here, I just want to get Alvaro's take. Like, what did you guys do? Did you repurpose this for hybrid casual? You took it out of cold storage and just slapped on some skippets and some meta core gameplay? Or like, what was the thinking?
I think this will not give justice to the work that was done by the paper team. Actually, what you see the rise here on the curves.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's a game that is still very, very ads driven. And the rise of in-apps is fundamentally doesn't show actually how paper is becoming actually one of our key games at Voodoo. It happened because the team really focused, and it took a long time actually, feature after feature, to improve the retention. Yes, we moved some of our, how can I say, in-house learnings. But the reality is that it took more little tweaks here and there to actually multiply the dist 30 by 5 after 1 year of work, right? And suddenly it's actually...
Yeah.
Wait, so by 5x?
From the dist 30 5x, yes.
Oh, wow.
And
can you just stress the time, please, Alvaro, so people understand like how much this process takes, because I think this is crucial.
Yeah, this is after 1 year of work. Yeah,
yeah. Thank you.
On paper, and I think it's only the beginning, because as you mentioned, I think the gameplay is really, really fun once you get the hook of it, and it opens a world of possibilities. And yes, with cool live ops, cool meaningful progression, cool depth, I think this game could be much, much bigger. And it's fresh. It's a gameplay that is still fresh nowadays. Yeah. And when you see the game from a visual standpoint and feature standpoint, again, I feel that it's only day one.
Mm. And when you say key, one of the key titles, is that in sense of revenue, or were you getting the most amount of learnings? Like, what does that word
revenue
mean?
Revenue. Okay. We consider it one of our top hybrid casual games. But among those, Paper is the one that is really mainly driven through ads. Yet
for now,
which is not a problem.
Yeah,
but definitely at some point, the more you go, the more, because you cannot just put skip it. I would say, like, you need to deliver value for our players so that they use skip it. And at the moment, I think it's more about the gameplay and the fun and making longer playtime sessions and coming back more and more. And at some point, I think with the features that will be introduced, probably in-apps will be justified because of a new experience we are introducing.
Mm. Yeah, keep in mind, guys, what I said that at the beginning, that the download numbers, the daily amount went from 50K to like 200K
yeah.
a day currently.
A day.
So
this is cool. This is cool because it opens the door to... Maybe in the back catalog of Odoo, you have a lot of legendary games.
Yeah.
That maybe could receive the same treatment. And this is something actually we are actively investing as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are a lot of failures, of course. Paper is a good success. And I hope we can replicate that in some of the successful historical titles that are still heavily downloaded with good metrics and still well beloved.
Yeah, I talk about a little bit with Nikolai when I was on a panel with him at Barcelona, and like literally used it in my slide. Like, so what's the next progression for Hole.io and Helix Jump?
You are well informed. It's absolutely. We are looking at these games. It's among the games that we are looking for.
It's very logical that you actually look into those games because there are those games just
the
like made hyper casual like
yes.
Like the legendary games.
Yeah, and it's difficult to actually find how you improve from there. Like it's you don't have a playbook for that, right? It's really a tailor made approach, and that's why we are hiring veterans to build a studio just around this.
That's what I wanted to ask. Like, what is like the, how the skill set needs to be different? Like, what are the different skills that you need to need to have now to actually build these like IIP based games? Because we're used to some other skill set as well before.
I would say we favor at the moment recruiting veterans from the industry, that people that operated large games, and games that were available for a long time. Right?
Okay,
I think this is about the people that we hire for live studios. Mm. So we look at people that are experienced in this and that are motivated as well to grow one game for the next years, right? And sometimes this mission can drive some people mad, right? Some people, they really need to do prototypes one after the other, and that's how they find their drive, which I totally respect, and we need those people. But yes, veterans and people that are truly passionate around life management. And life management means improving the game by staying also true to the original gameplay.
Mm.
And that's something that requires, a certain mindset and discipline.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's no joke to work on a game for like 5 years straight. It's like, you need to have some kind of endurance for that, not just creativity.
For me, I personally love it because every quarter it feels like a new, it's like a TV show. Like you have season one, season two, and it's just like surprises and cliffhangers. You never get bored. But from the outside, life management can look
very grindy.
Yes,
say.
It's.
But,
yeah, I mean,
but in reality, it's not. It's a whole adventure. Yeah.
I think this really kind of brings on the edge here with the setup, because with hyper casuals, of course, like there's definitely some learnings and stuff that can be passed on, like different studios doing different hyper casual games. But I think it's more inverse of like marketing, or like every game is kind of specific. But when we're talking live ops, I think it could have literally like a multiplicative effect on whole portfolio. If you know, like, let's say, oh, we tried this new, you know, offer setup, we tried this new other whatever metagame feature that, like, let's say,
absolutely,
five other games can implement in your portfolio, and you're sure that like the results were positive.
Absolutely. And the hyper casual DNA also allows to have teams that are ready to do that.
Hmm.
It sounds trivial, but sometimes you can be confronted within your own company when you have successful learnings that they don't scale across the portfolio.
Mm. Yeah, cool. Can you just get back that ad? It's just so weird. Okay, Sea of Conquest. Okay.
Yeah, Sea of Conquest.
Okay.
And the good thing is that hyper-casual people mentality with a DNA, they have really a performance-driven drive and pragmatism, right? So you don't need to spend time on doing internal PowerPoints or and knocking at people's door and say, hey, have you worried about this feature? There is a natural agility towards that. And believe me, this is not something to be taken for granted.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because you were in that position so many times thanks to the prototyping of hyper-casual games, right? So how it's done.
Yes, because when you do hyper-casual, I think you realize how hard is gaming. And it's like you see really like, oh my God, it takes like thousands of failures to make one single successful prototype, that every successful feature, people, they approach it with open arms. I think this is one of the reasons we can go fast as well.
There's, you know, like people saying, oh my God, hyper casual games, they're not even games. It's like, well, everybody can do that. It's like, you can say this because you never tried. So you
That's right.
Hard to fucking.
It's when you have to ship prototypes every 4 weeks to 3 weeks when they're in hyper casual and repeat, and fail during years. It can be desperate for some teams, yeah.
How this, like, the prototyping kind of framework changed now? You have,
That's a good question. It changed in the sense that we are not prototyping for hyper-casual anymore.
Okay.
It means all the funnel from the prototypes are aimed towards hybrid casual. Okay. That is, gameplays that are built to be
scaled up.
And to have a longer, experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of gameplay, the type of tests, the time we spend on the prototypes, it's completely different. We still use the mentality of hyper-casual to diversify our bets with publishing, internal studios, and a sense of speed. But we had to update the processes, right? And all the games are aimed to be hybrid-casual. We have to have a deeper player experience and a deeper economy.
Mm. So how long does it take to actually go from zero to have a prototype? And do we work on the prototype?
I think it's the number of prototypes. And we are testing thousands of prototypes a year. Mm. Like, I gave this statistic to somebody else. Like, if you had a studio of like 3-4 people and you were taking a month or 2 months like to do a prototype just for a core gameplay, to have the number of prototypes that we test, it would take you 50 years. It means you could spend your life and career to find the one, right?
Yeah.
So it's there is a question and never find it, right?
Yeah.
And it's a question of volume, but also we are allowing processes also to aim towards higher quality and and also higher depth of gameplay.
So let's say if you have a hyper casual game, build prototype in let's say 2 days. Now it takes a month, 2 months to just build that.
And if it goes well, we would continue as well at the core team for longer to scale and try and understand how the metrics sustain with more UA, because we only send games to live teams when we feel that those games are sustainable. We don't want to move a game from core teams to live teams if there is not
progression figure out.
Yes, and some conviction,
kind of scalability as well, right? So
exactly, conviction about this could scale.
How, you mentioned the sustainability or what are the KPIs, if you can say, is good, but what does the good mean?
For us, we are very driven towards margin. I think sometimes we see a lot of podcasts and many people focus on revenue. I think for us, it's about...
We had this discussion about profitability.
For us, it's really around... Yes, we look ideally 150% ROAS after 120 days.
Nice.
This is what we feel that it's a healthy business.
Okay.
That's very good specific number. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, that's you can kind of visualize now you know.
I also wanted to ask, so it's quite obvious that Voodoo is still probably one of the biggest publishers in terms of ad revenue, right? Still globally today. We can see from the conversation here where this is heading, right? You're going more IAP revenue. In how long or ever do you think that 80% of Voodoo's revenue will be IAP?
That's a good question. I mean, again, I have nothing against ads. Like, for example, if we had like 10 games like Paper, and there will be absolutely no problem, right?
Yeah.
I think it's more about scaling bigger games, but it's true that if games like Mob and Blockchain continually this grows, well, fundamentally it will change Voodoo to be a more in-app driven company, but not by design. I would say it's the balance between ads and in-apps is really something case by case, and we don't give targets as okay, this game needs to be in-apps. No, actually, what we look is LTV. Good LTV, good margin, and margin can comes from different ways. That's right. And but it's true that the more games like Mob and Blockchain take more space, it turns also Voodoo towards a more in-app driven organization. And it's also true, as I mentioned, more and more we will, I think, be positioned at the same level as historical companies like King, Playrix and Dream in the medium long term, and this fundamentally will be in-app driven revenue games. Absolutely.
So, simpler question, when we can actually expect this to be 80% IIPs? But do you have like a goal for, let's say, this year? We want to grow the IIP revenues by 20%. Or 30%,
no.
Or 5%.
No, we don't think like that. We set ourselves targets in revenue and gross margin.
Okay.
So, for example, last year, maybe, I don't know if you've seen the blog from our CEO, Alex Yazdi, was sharing about the key figures of 2023. And obviously, we want to grow from there, yes, to move from 600 million to, let's see, how far can we go this year?
Nice.
But gross margin is really, really important. I think, and it's normal that you look at this, right? When you have a market that is a little bit like more tense, I would say, it's normal also that you are sure that you can self-finance yourself, right? You cannot be in a situation that companies depend on external VC funds, right?
Yeah.
And when you are bidding a lot of ventures, it's important to have healthy practices that you can be truly independent. And you are not taking decisions based on, oh my God, will I get the funding in the next 6 months, right?
So would that also mean that like, just like very, very far, thinking far ahead, like that's also, that you would also have some kind of like web shop strategy that we keep hearing all the time in these days, that like every company is trying to move players to, you know, web stores.
It's not excluded. I mean, we have already direct interaction with our best players, for example. We were talking about Mob Control, so some of the best players are talking like almost in a daily base with the team. And it's really an interesting interaction, right? It's not, how can I say, abnormal to think, well, if there is already a real communication, why not to have also a real relationship regarding transactions, right?
Yeah.
Again, it needs to be done in a way that makes sense for the players. And so something that doesn't bring friction, something that is well, how can I say, integrated.
Yeah.
And it's not something like, it's not that one solution fits all. It's something that takes a bit of time. I don't think it's a short-term prio, but definitely I think it will be there at some point. Maybe not through the form of web. It can be actually direct transactions can take the form of very different forms and not just with the traditional web portal, right?
Yeah,
of course. Of course, that's just like for ahead. One of the other things that I had here, maybe I'm putting UA head here, is that did the UA change now kind of dramatically that we have game, or let's say you have games that have 50-50 split on the portfolio. So let's say Mob Control UA before UA now, or Paper IO2 UA before UA now, now that like there's an IAP element in it?
Yes and no. Yes, it changed because the prediction models need to be updated, right? In the sense of capitalizing on It's you move from a game that drives most of its LTV in a couple of weeks, and you are looking at prediction models way longer term, and you adapt your acquisition towards that. No, it didn't change in the sense that we keep on brutally testing tons and tons of creatives. So that's, I think, a strength of Voodoo is the sheer capacity of finding this best creative that suddenly will unlock growth. And I think they are the growth team. Sometimes they are the Hong Song heroes behind it all. Because when you look at the trajectory of Mob Control,
yes,
it couldn't be done as well with the expertise from the growth teams.
Yeah, 100%.
And yes, it changes as well that sometimes you're trying to look for different type of players and you and different type of how can I say methodologies and looking at more sophisticated player ads, playable ads. Sorry.
Yeah.
And sometimes you are constantly testing in this transition phase. But again, the DNA from the past is super useful.
Yeah, and Jakub, I can also add, so you move from ADROAS campaigns, which are, like Alvaro said, like optimized or like, oh, goal is to have ROAS in, let's say, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month. And now you're moving towards like purchase campaigns or like value optimization, which then takes into consideration that you want to see your money back in 6 months or, 4 months. And then like that's changing. The campaign structure would be most probably the same. The creative strategy has to be the same because that's the main point of hybrid casuals, right? You're kind of borrowing
keeping
all the
hyper casuals.
Yes,
strategy.
Yes. You're just changing like new audiences, payers, and that opens up again like a lot of new opportunities on the blended ROAS campaigns. I was checking the PayPrio too, like obviously Uplovin is top channel, at least from the sensor tower we see, which makes a lot of sense. And like that's it, like that's you go from ADROAS to hybrid ROAS or like branded ROAS and eventually IIP ROAS as well and value optimization.
Yeah. Can you just remind blended ROAS shortly for people?
Blended ROAS when you have 50-50 split in-app purchases and in-app ads, you are taking both ad revenue and in-app revenue into consideration. So that's happening,
yeah,
on the campaign level.
Good summary, absolutely.
Yeah, sounds great.
Just a question here, last one. What's headcount right now at Voodoo?
It's around 600-700 people, I would say, if you look at all also the companies that join us, and I think we are actually recruiting many people on live studios. So I take the opportunity, like if you feel that you have the chops and you align with our ways of working, yeah, we are looking for veterans to manage our key games. Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely sounds good. Any other question, guys?
That was really insightful, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing the knowledge, Alvaro, because it's not a lot of times that people actually talk numbers.
Yeah,
and
yes.
Real numbers.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah, no ministry of truth. It was good. Like, yeah, good.
Well, I appreciate you guys inviting. It's really a pleasure. And yes, I think we sharing some numbers. I think it's part of our culture. I think like we are a bit of transparency. We are very no bullshit and very transparent.
That's
in a way.
And I
think it translates somehow here. But it's really a pleasure. And I think maybe we should talk again maybe in 1 year and see a little
that's
bit.
That's what I wanted to say. Yeah, we can cross-check like how everything is going. Because
exactly.
I think this is what like third Voodoo episode, so we are looking very closely what you're doing.
I know like you know your podcast was really discussed a lot internally when we were saying okay this is right, no this is wrong, this is wrong, and they say these guys they figure out, so it's really really cool.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. Yeah, because like we're literally entering that exact phase, as you say, like there are now on the market like a couple of really solid hybrids, and like there will be more. My guess is that there will be 10 more this year that will breach that like 1 million a month in IAP mark.
Yes.
At least
10 more, yeah.
At least. And the market will consolidate, and then it becomes another, you know, level up of this game, which means live ops. You now need to sustain those hybrids.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just, like, create the hybrid, and then what?
and definitely, I think it's highly probable that hybrid casual is just another transition phase.
Yeah.
It's highly probable. It will be difficult to tell how long will be this milestone, but definitely I think what is cool about Voodoo is we don't wait for the things to decline to start immediately about the next growth, right? So for example, when Voodoo was leading a hyper casual, Voodoo had the mindset to immediately start creating hybrid casual, and it, because it takes a lot of years to figure this out. And we at this moment, we are already venturing in like, what is the next step after hybrid casual? Because it will take time, it takes on learnings, but we cannot wait for the things to go down, because it's very difficult to transform a company if everything is burning around you, because it brings, because it's stressful, your lack of resources, it's difficult to attract talent because talented people join companies that grow. So it's anticipation. It's easier said than done, but this is really something that I think is part of our culture.
Cool.
Nice.
See you in a year.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks very much, Alvaro, for coming. And
welcome.
Yeah,
a real pleasure.
I will definitely take you up for your word there. Like, we should definitely do this. It's like, let's say, this post-hybrid phase of the market.
Yeah, will be a pleasure. I hope I will have the same smile in 1 year. I think I will.
I think even bigger smile on the since you are seeing the growth trajectory. And thank you very much. And thank you guys for listening. Also, please join the Slack. It's always in the show notes. Always. There is a link. So please. For those who don't know, we have a Slack channel. It's almost 1,000 people from various companies, different positions. It's really good. Always good conversations are happening there.
If you can't get in, that's because Maciej blocked your email because you weren't following the guidelines. Don't email me. Email Maciej. Yeah.
We have rules. You need to have a photo. You need to be able to...
There's also special stuff we announced there. For instance, the game that we play on the podcast, they get announced a week before, so you can tag along. So feel free to join.
Yeah. And then please give us a subscribe. Also share the podcast with your friends, colleagues, dogs, and cats. There is a grumpy cat behind Felix and our flamboyant flamingo. So, you know, animals like us quite a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, enough bullshit. Thank you very much, guys. See you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get these like magic numbers.
We talk about this all the time.
No, we don't. I've never heard about it.
Our last podcast was 1 hour 8 minutes long, and it was like exploded as soon as we put it out.
It was warranted, you know, good content.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Anyway, did you get the note, Alvaro? The ones I sent Jonah. Okay.
I did.
Good.
Okay. Should we get started then?
Yes.
Any questions, Alvaro? Should we just get started?
No, just remember this. This is no bullshit podcast, so you know anything that you say, it's you know it has to be no bullshit.
Yeah, but honestly, like whatever you feel like,
doesn't live by this rule today though. But
whatever you feel, I'm just saying that like say yes, no, or no comment, or like you know maybe well, like that's
I don't believe in some sign boards maybe. Yeah, like,
twice like.
This is the real deal. Sounds very good.
Do you have all the games open and the emulator?
Yeah. I have that.
Oh, perfect. Very good.
So let's start, Maciej. Can you give a shout out for Turkey as well in the intro, and then we'll start.